are listening to Perpetual Notion Machine. I'm your host, Serena Zhao. With the snow falling and plants dormant right now, winter's a great time to think about what's in store in the next growing season. And just like garden plants you might be planting already, trees need some TLC too sometimes. And figuring out what needs to be done to maintain the trees in your yard can be confusing, but there's actually a wealth of local resources available. So to help us understand what's going on with the trees so that we're ready for the spring, our guest on PNM tonight is Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator with Dane County Extension. All right, welcome to Perpetual Notion Machine, Lisa.
Thanks much.
All right, so I guess we can just dive into, if you wouldn't mind giving an overview of some of the main variables that affect tree health, and what are the main things that we should be thinking about?
Sure. Well, this time of year, it's a good time to do pruning on a lot of the deciduous species that shed their leaves. It also can be a time to do pruning on evergreens, although we usually wait for those. But many of the trees, such as oaks, should not be pruned unless it is during the dormant season. So that's one thing to think about. If you have problems with spongy moth, it used to be called gypsy moth, spongy moth is the new name. If you had problems with that this year, and I know a lot of folks did, you can look for egg masses at this time of year and scrape those off, and then you won't have caterpillars chewing on your leaves in spring. And once we get to spring, well, there's all kinds of tree care that can go on at that time of year, too. There's, if we have a dry spring, you need to make sure that you're watering. Also, through the season, particularly if we have a dry fall, it's important to water your trees. It's important to watch your trees for signs of disease or insect infestation. And trees are really important. They do all kinds of things for us. They provide shade that can help your energy bill. They can help in preventing stormwater damage because when rain hits leaves, it slows down. And it can also help suck up extra water. It sequesters carbon from car exhaust and free floating carbon in the air. And they're so great. They can improve your property values. So it's a good thing to take care of them.
Great. Yeah, it sounds like they do everything. If we could just go back to the spongy moth and the signs of disease that you mentioned, mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about, other than recognizing these egg masses, what are some signs that a tree that you have might be affected by the moth? Or, what are some telltale signs of disease that we should keep an eye on?
Sure. There's a couple of different insect pests that we worry about, and one of them is the spongy moth. The egg masses will hatch out caterpillars early in the spring, usually around end of April, early May, and they will start feeding on leaves once the leaves start to expand. We particularly worry about these on oak trees, although they can be on a number of different species. Oaks tend to be particularly problematic. And the caterpillars will go through several stages that we call instars through the season, and they'll get bigger and bigger. And you can usually, if you've got them, you'll see them either on the tree, on the tree trunk, or possibly on your house or on your roof or other places. There tend to be a lot of them. And as they get bigger, you'll notice they have pairs of blue and red spots going up and down their back, and they're also quite hairy. And you would notice a lot of what we call frass around your tree. If you have your car parked under it, what we call frass is a nice name for insect poop. And so you'd find a lot of that because they're chewing on the leaves. And you'd also notice a thinning out of the So those are some things to watch for spongy moth. Later in the year, you'll actually see the moth, usually the female, because she's flightless, and so she'll be hanging out on the tree trunk, and she's white in color.
Oh, how big are they?
About an inch and a half. And the egg masses, when they're first laid, they're kind of a rusty brown, and then they fade to a lighter colored, almost beige color. And you would not only see them on the lower trunk, but often up in the upper branches. So if you have a big tree and you have a lot of egg masses, getting a certified arborist in to treat those egg masses, and they can use organic oil products to do that with, that would be a good thing, because obviously you can't necessarily get up to those tree branches as a homeowner. You'd need specialized equipment.
Yeah, so the certified arborists, it sounds like they can help you with all sorts of tree problems. Could you go into a bit more detail about what distinguishes them from other, you know, from just anybody else who might be going up in a tree for some other reason?
Yeah, certified arborists have to take an exam. They go through an extra level of training, and every year they have to take some type of continuing education in order to keep their certification. So it's important to get a certified arborist, and you can find one at the Wisconsin Arborist Association website, which you can just, you know, use your internet browser and type that in. You can also type in WAA-ISA, and it should come up there. And from that point, there's a button that says hire a certified arborist, and then you can find one in your area with a number of different specializations. If you have an insect problem, you can choose one that has insect and disease treatment, identification, and if you have, like if you needed your tree to be cabled or, you know, something, other type of tree service, there are a lot of different services that you can choose with different boxes that you check on the website.
Great. Are there any concerns about if you aren't able to find a certified arborist, you know, to help you with your problem? What are some things that we might want to watch out for?
You'd want to make sure that the person has liability or insurance that covers them if they should become injured on your property. It would be really, you know, tough if you didn't know anything about trees to know that whether they do or don't know what they're doing. But that would be one thing to look for. And you could certainly also, you know, ask what their background is and what kinds of safety equipment they're using.
Great. So, yeah, these certified arborists can help you out with getting those spongy moth egg masses out. And it sounds like there's also a few other insect threats to tree health that are here or maybe on their way. Could you tell us a little bit more about those?
Sure. So the emerald ash borer, I'm sure almost everybody has heard about that one. That's been in Dane County since, probably 2012 or 13. And the emerald ash borer was first found in Michigan, and it only attacks ash, not mountain ash, because those aren't true ash, but white ash, green ash, black ash. And we have a lot of ash trees in our forests in the state of Wisconsin. And the ash borer has killed millions of ash trees in the Midwest and on the East Coast. And it's just continuing to spread. It's important because one of the ways it spreads is through moving firewood around, that you don't move firewood, say if you have a cabin up north and you cut down an ash tree here that had some kind of issue and you might not have known if it was emerald ash borer or not, that you not take that wood all the way up to your cabin in the north woods, because the ash borer larvae are right underneath the bark and they can then come out and create problems wherever they're taken. So it's a very small insect. I have never myself actually seen a live specimen of an adult. It's only about a quarter to half an inch, and it is bright metallic green, but they attack the top of the tree first and lay eggs, and then the larvae are what cause the problem because they tunnel around right under the bark where the tree's water conducting tissue is, and they destroy that and they're feeding, and then the tree can't take up water. So that's a big problem. So there are treatments that they can use. They're typically injected insecticides that are injected into the trunk of the tree, and depending on the type and concentration, it might last a year, it might last 2 or 3 or even 4 years before you need to get it treated again. But unfortunately, if you want to keep your ash, it would need to be treated kind of in perpetuity.
Wow. And what happens if you don't keep up with the treatments? What happens to the tree?
Well, most likely the tree will be attacked and you would see dieback over time, and you know, then it can just take a couple of years depending on the size and health of the tree when it was attacked. It may take a couple, 3, maybe even 4 seasons, but it will eventually kill the tree. And the thing that we worry about is that the insects feeding actually changes the construction of the wood, the structural integrity of the wood. And so sometimes there are limbs that fall off unexpectedly, and we've had unexpected tree failures as well. So it's important, if you have an ash, to have a certified arborist with insect experience to take a look at it and see if it's infested. If you've had 30% loss of the canopy, it's best to take it down. If you were able to catch it early, you can certainly treat it.
Wow. If it has to be cut down, other than don't move it, do you have any recommendations for what to do with that wood?
Yeah. You can, there are a few things you can do with it. You can have it debarked, and if it's debarked, then the insect larvae will be exposed to the air and they'll dry out and die. You can have it chipped up, and that, you know, if the chips are an inch or less, then the larvae won't be able to survive in that. But there's also some different kinds of organizations, like Wisconsin Urban Wood, that you can hook up an arborist with, say, a woodworker, and the woodworker could make, you know, cabinetry or flooring or something out of that wood rather than getting rid of it. Now, if you wanted to use it for firewood, you can cut it up, but then I would put it under a tarp and make sure that tarp is weighted down so that the insects can't get out, and I would leave it for a year or so, and that should take care of the any insects that are in it.
So you don't want to have the logs just sitting around in your yard, for example. The insects can get out and find another tree?
Exactly. Ooh. Yeah.
Okay. So once it's taken one tree, that's not the end of it.
You gotta, no, sadly it's not.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the prognosis with emerald ash borer? Is there any way of, beating it back in range?
Yeah, when it first got into the area, there's not really anything you can do about it at this point. In areas where it hasn't invaded yet, they are trying to do some things. Unfortunately, unlike the spongy moth, which you can treat with aerial treatments out of planes, they typically use an organic treatment based on a bacillus, a bacterium, that they will, you know, have the planes spray in the spring, or they'll use a pheromone-based treatment in the fall. Well, not fall, but, you know, August. But they don't really have anything like that, unfortunately, for emerald ash borer. They are looking at some biocontrols, but so far nothing really to help things on a big scale. You know, on a homeowner scale, yeah, you can inject your trees, but unfortunately the trees out in our forest lands are pretty much unprotected at this point.
So the areas, well, I guess within Wisconsin, what are the areas that are most affected right now?
It's pretty much the southern to middle part of the state. It hasn't gotten, as far as I know, or at least it hasn't been found. Let's put it that way. It probably is all the way to the state border on the west. There are a few counties up in the north that haven't been affected, but it has been found in most of the counties in Wisconsin. And you can actually go to the DNR's website, and they have maps there. DATCAP, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, they also have information there about, you know, what you can do in terms of treatment. And Extension has a fact sheet that's titled, if I'm going to remember the right title, it's something like, "Is My Ash Tree Worth Treating for EAB?" And that kind of helps you to figure out, based on the damage that you're seeing, whether it's too far gone to treat or not.
So are there a lot of ash trees in municipal areas? Like, my understanding is, for example, with the Dutch elm disease, there would be, you know, like whole streets just mm-hmm. totally no more trees at this point. What's the use of ash in the built environment?
Yeah, unfortunately, the replacement for the American elms was, in many cases, ash. Nice native tree, very tolerant of urban conditions, salt, heat, drought, all of that. And so it seemed like a good idea. One of the things that people who are arborists are always trying to get people to understand is tree diversity is really important, because just like you said, if you only have one type of tree on a street and something like emerald ash borer comes through, then you have no more trees. So it's a good idea not to plant the same type of tree over and over. You should have a variety of different trees from different families. And we did have about 30% ash in our urban forests, which are primarily the city-planted trees in the Madison area. Some communities it was more than that, some it was more like 20%. So Madison had a really good plan to try and treat trees that were in good shape and of a certain diameter, and get rid of ones that weren't in good shape. So they tried to proactively take out and treat trees, because it's a lot of money, and it was hard for the city budget to absorb all of that. So we still have quite a few trees in the terrace areas, but a lot of them are in private yards as well.
Gotcha. So if someone's in a position where they're looking to plant a tree, what do you think is the best way to go about choosing what tree to plant. So, like, you wouldn't pick an ash.
Yes,
maybe look
right
at some of the neighbors. But
yeah,
how would you recommend?
And nobody's even selling ash anymore. So, but yeah, it's a good idea to look at what your neighbors have and plant something different. And I know everybody loves maples. They have beautiful fall color, so maples do tend to be overplanted. But there are many, many other beautiful types of shade and ornamental trees, both native and non-native, that can have good fall color depending on, you know, what type of tree it is. Some things to think about. The first thing to do is figure out where you want to put the tree and then call Digger's Hotline to make sure there aren't any utilities there. Don't forget to look up, because if there are overhead wires, then that may not be a good place to put a tree, or you'd need to use a small tree there. And also, you don't want to put anything too close to the house. But you do need to look into things like, what is the sun exposure like? What is the soil like? What is the soil moisture like? So that you match the environment that you have to the tree that you want to decide on.
Are there any trees that are incompatible with each other if they're too close?
Well, black walnut tends to put out a toxin in its root system, and that's called juglone, and that can affect a number of different plants. A lot of times I get calls about tomato plants that are dying within the root zone of black walnut. There are some woody species that it affects, but a lot of the species that it affects tend to be herbaceous ones, like flowers and vegetables, but there are some woody species as well. We have a nice fact sheet at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, the PDDC site at UW, that there's a fact sheet on black walnut and some species that are compatible with it and not compatible with it.
Great. So the black walnut is kind of a disease. Well, not really. It's one of the things that might be causing some plants that you have to not be doing so hot.
Absolutely. It's a great competitive advantage for the black walnut. And hickories and butternuts also have the same chemical in the root system, although to a lesser degree.
So for infectious diseases that are affecting trees, if they're not under the influence of a black walnut, what are some signs that that you might notice on a tree and then prompt you to, you know, look at the diagnostic sheet?
Sure. Well, first of all, let me say that my office, if you call me, I can help you with plant questions. I'd love to have you send me electronic photos so that I can see what you're talking about, because it's very easy to end up playing the telephone game and I have a picture in my head that's completely different than what you're describing. That's one way that you can figure out what's going on with your trees, and then I can refer you to our plant disease expert, or I can refer you to our insect expert as well. But some things that you might see spots on the leaves. Now, typically, those are not going to be necessarily something that's anything more than cosmetic, but it can be. If you see mushrooms growing out of the trunk, that's usually not a good sign. If you see cracking in the bark or bark falling off, that's typically not a good sign either. If the tree just doesn't seem to be growing very well, and it, you know, maybe it's got a kind of off color to it, or it's dropping a lot of yellow leaves, or in the case of oak, if it's dropping leaves in July, it could be oak wilt. So that's something to watch out for as well.
And these are issues that often have treatments or things that you can do, or
Well, by the time you see mushrooms coming out of a tree's trunk, it's probably structurally compromised already. So in that case, probably not. Not much you can do either about cracks in the trunk. Sometimes you can treat leaf spots, but many times we don't recommend doing that because it isn't always very successful, and it gets a lot of chemical into the environment, and many times, like I said, it's just cosmetic. So other than it looking not so great, it doesn't really hurt the tree. But there are other things that you can treat for.
Great. So one thing I've been wondering is, I don't know if it pertains to the health of the tree itself, but should you rake leaves or leave them where they fall?
Yeah. Now, if you have a leaf spot disease on your tree and it's dropping a lot of leaves that have spots on them, definitely do rake those up because many times there are spores on those leaves, and by removing them, you're getting rid of what basically would serve as inoculum for the next season. So, yeah, that's great to rake up. Now, on the other hand, if you don't have diseases on your trees and maybe you have a bunch of perennials planted underneath them, you may want to leave leaves over winter. There are certainly pollinators that can hide in leaves, not so much on leaves on turf grass, but leaves in areas that, you know, maybe they're just lying on dirt or something like that. And speaking of pollinators, it's not a bad idea to leave some areas unraked or with leaf piles on them. And that can help out overwintering pollinators. But for leaves on your lawn, you probably shouldn't leave them because they can mat down and kill off your turf. So it's kind of a depends on where it is sort of question.
Okay. So we're almost out of time, but I would love to have you just direct us to any initiatives that are going on in the area. I think you mentioned a few before we got on the air. Where can people go to find more information about tree care and also get involved potentially in some organizations?
Sure. So the Tree Canopy Collaborative is a new initiative where we're trying to increase tree canopy, especially in areas of social vulnerability in the Dane County area. And if you just look up Tree Canopy Collaborative, you can sign up to help us plant trees. And if you're interested in the Heritage Oaks program, we're remeasuring some over 200-year-old oaks. We're measuring the diameter of them, and we're making sure that they are where we think they are. The Dane County Tree Board is involved in that, and also the State Cartographer's Office, and CARPSE is involved in that, too. And you can take pictures of these trees. We're inviting the public to help us relocate them. So if you look up Heritage Oaks, you can find information on how to get involved.
All right, great. Thank you so much. This is Lisa Johnson with the Dane County Extension, and this has been an episode of Perpetual Notion Machine. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for having me.